Good morning, and thanks for joining us here for this week's edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Some lawmakers in Wisconsin are working to legalize medical marijuana, but not everyone has the same plan, and not everyone is on board. We're talking with a Republican leader who's introducing medical marijuana legislation, and you can join in. 1-800-642-1234. What do you think Wisconsin could gain from legalizing medical marijuana? Do you support the move, or are you against medical marijuana for a specific reason? You can give us a call or email ideas at WPR.org. Mary Felskowski serves in the State Assembly. She represents District 35, which covers Merrill, Antigo, and Tomahawk in north central Wisconsin. She's a Republican and the Assistant Majority Leader. Representative, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We should start with the why. Why do you think medical marijuana should be legal in Wisconsin?
I think I look at the trends that are going on in the state. You see people that are turning to more and more alternative medicine, organic foods. People are very conscious of what they're, you know, ingesting for their own nutritional as well as health needs. And I think people are looking for an alternative that does not have the side effects and still has positive effects on whatever medical condition that they have.
And one element of this is that you've spoken about your own medical history relating to this bill. How is your personal experience informing your understanding here?
So back in 2014, I was diagnosed with breast cancer for the second time, and this time around it was real serious. It was over stage three. And I reacted extremely heavy to the chemo and the Neustra that they had given me. So I literally lived on opioids. And when you take opioids to that extent or any extent, then the side effects that come with it. And then you're on anti-anxiety drugs. You're on, you know, all kinds of other drugs with side effects that I will live with for the rest of my life. Not that I'm complaining because I'm here. But if there had been a natural alternative without those side effects, like a medical marijuana, I sure would have loved to have tried that or been able to try that instead of what I took.
So you see marijuana being a potential alternative or a substitute for traditional pain medicine?
Not only pain medications, but people that are dealing with MS, AIDS, cancer, where they, you know, they just can't keep food down anymore or lost their appetite. I think there's, you know, things that can be done, or there's uses that it would apply to that would give people the relief without the medications with the side effects.
Speaker Robin Voss has applauded your efforts on the bill. He's also said it's clear that our caucus hasn't reached a consensus. Does that mean that passing this bill is actually kind of unlikely?
I don't expect this bill to pass this session. My goal this session with releasing this is to get a hearing. I think that, you know, we don't have consensus in the caucus, but a lot of that is people are unsure. They just don't have the knowledge to make a decision. So if we could have a public hearing, it's going to be educational. And that's my goal for this session, is so that people can start to understand and help form their opinions, take away. You know, the one thing that's out there right now is marijuana is a Schedule I drug at the federal level. Because of that being a Schedule I drug, there isn't the research in the United States. Universities haven't been able to research it. I would love if that was reduced off of the Schedule I and colleges like the University of Wisconsin with the Medical Society and everything could do some research and we actually had hard, firm evidence. Right now, everything we go off of has come from other countries and that takes away some of the certainty for people to actually be able to move forward with it. That's what we need.
Do you also hear a conflict with that federal law, though, in just the legality of the circumstances with our federalist system? Or is it really about research? I mean, are your colleagues saying, we can't legalize it in Wisconsin because federally it's illegal?
Well, you know, I think that is always going to be a concern. I'll tell you what, because of it being illegal at the federal level and how it interacts with our statutes and at the state level, it was difficult to draft. It was really difficult. You know, when it comes around employer options and in other things, it was extremely difficult. But having said that, I think you're seeing something. 33 states have legalized it. And I think this is where the states are saying, you know what, a little bit of states' rights going on here. you know, we feel that it should be this way, and they're pushing back on the federal government. So we do have medical marijuana in 33 states. If Wisconsin could move forward, you know, 34 out of 50 states, I think it's, you know, pretty soon the government at the federal level is going to have to address it.
State Representative Mary Felskowski serves Wisconsin's 35th Assembly District, and she's introduced a bill to legalize medical marijuana in the state. There's room for you in this conversation. Do you think that medical marijuana would be an economic benefit to Wisconsin? Do you think it could help people suffering from medical conditions? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's welcome Brad from Saukville to the conversation. Brad, thanks for being here.
Hi, good morning. How are you both doing today?
Well, thanks. Did you have a question for the representative?
Yes. My question is, and I'm not sure if she did or not, but where was the support during Governor Evers' bill signing that was overturned by Boston Fitzgerald on the medical or recreational aspect? And then how come now it's being passed as a Republican, which, granted, doesn't matter Republican or Democrat, but where was the support during the budget?
All right. Thanks, Brad. Because Governor Evers included some marijuana proposals in his state budget, but they were removed, Representative.
They were. And in addition to that, Senator Cheston, Senator Erpenbach, and Representative Taylor had put out a bill. I did not support the way they were drafted. I support the concept, but not the drafting of it. I felt that there needed to be, this is my personal opinion, and it probably will reflect some others, that there needed to be more and tighter regulation on it and how it was regulated.
Okay, so when we're looking at that bill that's been introduced by Democrats but has Republican co-signers, the difference here or the differences that stop you from just signing onto that bill, what are they?
So a lot of it is how it's regulated. Maybe if I explain what I did. What we did is we formed a medical marijuana commission, and they'll be made up of appointees. The governor will have an appointee, the majority leader and the minority leader in the Senate will have an appointee, the speaker in the assembly, and then the minority leader in the assembly. So it will be represented by all parties if it's a split house, and there'll be five. The governor then appoints the chair of that commission. They will regulate everything around the medical marijuana. The difference with the other bills that are out there is it's inside the agencies, DHS and DADCAP. My goal was to kind of because this is going to be a political football and a hot button, no matter what. We've seen it in other states. So my goal was to kind of remove it from the legislature or the agencies. That commission then will regulate and enforce growing, processing, and dispensaries. In addition to that, they will have the list of the medical marijuana cardholders, and they will also then work with the medical examining board to add any conditions, medical conditions, to the allowable uses. So we wrote it that way. We wrote it extremely tight because I know that our colleagues in the Assembly and the Senate, they're going to want a tightly regulated industry, and that's why we did it the way we did. The other bills and the proposals out there was much more, I will say, loosely written, unregulated, and it was inside the agencies. And I just didn't support that. But I support the concept.
Okay, so some differences in the details there. We can explore further as we continue this conversation with State Representative Mary Felskowski. She stays with us, and we're talking about legislation that legalizes medical marijuana in Wisconsin under certain circumstances. The representative has already said she doesn't expect it to pass, but does see this as an opportunity to have a discussion about it and perhaps figure out how to find reliable research to help us understand whether it's an option for Wisconsin. You're part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. You can talk about whether you agree with medical marijuana being legalized in the state. I'm Keeley Boltina, and the State Capitol Report continues here on The Morning Show in just a moment. We're talking about legalizing medical marijuana in Wisconsin here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Republican lawmakers have a plan that includes licensing dispensaries for people with medical conditions. Think cancer, AIDS, Crohn's disease, MS. Some fellow Republicans aren't as supportive. We want to hear from you. Do you think there's enough research on marijuana for Wisconsin to allow it in any form? What questions do you think researchers need to answer? 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. State Representative Mary Felskowski is a Republican from North Central Wisconsin, and we're talking to her about legislation she's spearheading that legalizes medical marijuana under some circumstances. And Jeremy from Racine is ready to join the conversation. Jeremy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm in full support of full legalization, but I can understand just going for medical route at this point. Right now, we have a situation where people are self-medicating themselves regardless if the legislators legalize it or not. We are surrounded by states that are completely legal. Two of them are recreational. Minnesota's legal for medical. And people are just traveling to these states, picking up what they want, and or they're just going to the streets. That's what's more concerning to me is people who have conditions, who go to the streets, purchase the cannabis, and not really know exactly what they're purchasing based on word of mouth. There's nothing backing up what they are buying is going to be safe for them and or serve the purpose. So Wisconsin just needs to start moving forward on this so we could better get a grip on it and regulate it and reduce needless arrests of people who are purchasing it on the streets and then getting picked up by the police, going to jail for these small petty things. We just got to get moving forward here and put an end to this and get with the program.
Jeremy, thanks for those thoughts. Representative Felskowski, what do you hear there in what Jeremy's thinking?
So I agree with him as far as like the potency. People do not know what they're buying. And inside this bill, we have a very, very strict packaging. So the testing and processing. So the potency would be displayed right on there so people would have a concept of what they're buying. And I do agree with that. I'm very fortunate that I was able to go to NCSL, which is the National Council of State Legislators, this summer, and I had extensive conversations with people from other states. 8 of the 9 states that went full legalization did it through a ballot initiative, not through state legislation. And it was very, just talking to them, it was very helpful for me because it helped me decide, what worked for them, what didn't work for them, what was a complete nightmare and in which way to go. So, I do think that we need very strict regulation processing and packaging on this.
And part of that comes up in your bill because yours differs from that Democratic or bipartisan medical marijuana proposal in that you can't smoke marijuana in your bill. Also, you can't grow your own plants, which is something that other states have allowed. Why did you make those decisions?
So after we had a rough draft of the legislation, we had what I would call focus groups. So I sat down with over 20 of the legislators in our caucus or their staff members and said, okay, what is acceptable, what's not acceptable? And people felt that if you're going to take marijuana for your own personal use, you're only impacting yourself. There was a large concern about the smoking, secondhand smoke, and how it would affect children in the home or others. So that's why we removed smoking. In addition to that, they did not want the edibles from the standpoint that, a lot of the gummy bears and different things, they're very appealing to children. And if you're having brownies or whatever, cookies or whatever in your home, it would be harder to regulate keeping it out of the hands of children. So by taking those two forms of consumption out, there was no need for grow your own anymore. So we allow pills, we allow tincture, liquid, patches, or creams.
How do you make sure then that this is accessible to everyone? I'm thinking about how proponents of legalized marijuana point to it as a potential economic opportunity. Couldn't people who are producing it for medical benefits also see the same and raise prices, kind of like we're seeing with prescription drugs?
And that's where competition comes in the market. There will be enough licenses and producers where competition will pretty much take care of that.
Does the commission that you're putting together, the Medical Marijuana Regulatory Commission, would they have any say in that or anything to do in that to set guidelines for what pricing might look like?
No.
Okay.
We do not have them doing that.
Mary Felskowski. Go ahead.
They will set the licensing fees, and we gave them parameters. We looked at what other states were doing, and we gave them parameters on what the licensing fees could be. And what really kind of surprised me is most states charge between $100 and $200 for a medical marijuana card. And it's kind of like, why are you charging that much, you know, for people that need this for medicinal purposes? In addition to that, we do not have sales tax on it. We have one excise tax of 10% that will go from the processor to the sale of the dispensary. And that money, all the money will go into a segregated fund. And the purpose of that is to fund the commission. And then we recommend that any excess goes for TAD courts or drug rehab.
Mary Felskowski is the Republican Assistant Majority Leader in the Wisconsin State Assembly. And we're talking about legislation she's put together along with another Republican colleague that would legalize medical marijuana under certain circumstances. And Rich from Rhinelander wants to be part of the discussion. Rich, thanks for being here.
I just wanted to say I welcome the proposal and also to point out that in terms of another naturally occurring substance, Wisconsin nationally has a reputation as being extremely open to and very liberal about consumption of alcohol. So some of us actually think alcohol probably should, in terms of overconsumption, should probably have more restrictions on users. But this is a humanitarian proposal that's being offered, and I welcome it because I don't see why ill people, sick people, should be denied the opportunity to try a substance that elsewhere in the nation people are having access to.
Rich, thank you for that. And Tom from Burlington called to say he takes care of a cancer patient right now, and access to resources like medical marijuana that can help are difficult to obtain. So Representative Felskowski certainly feeling the access here, feeling like it's an option. We've got some audience members who think that. We talked about the fact that many of Wisconsin's neighboring states are legalizing it. Does that concern you, or does that help kind of feel make you feel like we're in good company if we were to legalize it?
I think it makes us feel like we're in good company. I think, you know, when other states, you know, are first on doing something and you realize that, you know, this went through and the sky hasn't fallen, you know, the world didn't come to an end, you know, it's like a testing ground. So watching other states and they go through the process and then the results of that, it always makes it a little bit easier. But, you know, it's unique. What we did in 2018 when we started looking at this is Ledge Council, who does a lot of the research and different things to us, pulled together a comparison of five Midwestern states that had recently legalized medical marijuana. And the forms are all over the board and what they allow it to. So it's interesting that it's like no two states actually went down the same path. Like in Minnesota, they only allow a pill form, you know, where Illinois and Michigan allow smoking, pill form, edibles, everything. So how each and every state has done it has been very interesting to research and kind of go through.
So we're able to learn from that.
Very much so.
We know that polls are not everything. We also know that the Marquette University Law School poll showed 83% of the people who answered the survey supported medical marijuana. With that high approval rating, why do you think some of your colleagues are still opposed to your bill? What are you hearing?
I don't, you know, I want to debunk the fact that there's, you know, these are just big bad guys and they don't want people to have access. They're cautious on what are the side effects and everything. And that's why I just think that once there's a hearing and there's some more education on it, people will slowly change their minds. And or Lincoln and Langley County, which are my district, they both had non-binding resolutions in the spring election. And there it was over 75%. So people are more comfortable with it. And I just think the legislature can be cautious on these types of things because it is a big change. It is a very big change. And you're putting another controlled substance out there. A lot of people are concerned because it's not FDA approved. They want to make sure it's safe. And I think it's more caution than opposition.
So, you know, you're in the assembly, in the Senate, chances for the bill look slim, too. Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says he personally opposes it, doesn't think there are enough votes. Your goal is to have a hearing. What do you hope people get out of that hearing?
Education.
Yeah.
You know, and this is not a Republican versus a Democrat issue. I have colleagues in the Democratic caucus who are opposed to it because a lot of them have a concern that the ones that are opposed, they have a concern with the FDA approval. So it's education overall. What are the effects? One of the things that we did, and this was a recommendation from one of our focus groups with our colleagues, is when you get a recommendation for medical marijuana from a doctor, not a prescription, it's a recommendation, that gets entered into the prescription drug monitoring program. That way we prevent like the Candyman effect where you can go to four or five different doctors, get numerous prescriptions and get them filled. But in addition to that, and if you are in an accident, whatever, and you end up in an emergency room, having medical marijuana in your system would affect how other drugs would interact with you. So this is also like a security feature.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
A lot of different things in there.
I'm sure there will be much more discussion about it. Thank you so much. State Representative Mary Felskowski represents District 35. She's a Republican and the Assistant Majority Leader. We really appreciate your time today. Up next is news. Then State Representative David Crowley shares the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus's plans to address racial disparities in our state. I'm Keely Boltina, and this is The Morning Show. This morning, members of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus are releasing plans they say could disrupt racial disparities in Wisconsin. We're talking about it here on the State Capitol Report. Thanks for being with us. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. A comprehensive report out this fall called Race in the Heartland shows white people in Wisconsin have relatively good outcomes, and black people are much worse off than the national average. We're second to last in the nation for incarceration. African Americans in Wisconsin are 11 times more likely to be in custody than white Wisconsinites. What do you think lawmakers can do to help ease the differences in opportunity for black and white people? What do you see in your part of the state? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You're part of this conversation. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. State Representative David Crowley joins us on The Morning Show. He's a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 17th Assembly District, which includes Milwaukee. Representative, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's glad to be here.
Racial inequities exist pretty much everywhere. Our schools, employment, voter participation, many other areas. This package of bills you're set to release is focused really on the criminal justice system. Why did you choose that area?
Well, one, we have been leading a lot in the criminal justice area as it relates to these racial disparities. And our goal is really, you know, to change the status quo that's led Wisconsin to consistently being ranked number one in many of these racially unequal disparities. And so we really focus on criminal justice because we know that we see so many African-American men and particularly Native American men that are going to prison at a very alarming rate here. And so we want to tackle something that we know that we can get something that's palatable to many of our Republicans. We believe that criminal justice reform is one of those things.
Right, because we do see minority populations overrepresented in Wisconsin's prisons. Those numbers, we just know. There are proportionately more Black and Native American prisoners in custody than there are proportionately for white people.
Absolutely. And so what we're doing is we're introducing six bills that are being introduced today from many of our members of the Legislative Black Caucus to really curb many of these outcomes, negative outcomes for African-Americans and Native Americans related to the criminal justice system. I mean, you hit it right on the head when you talked about the report that recently came out, Race in the Heartland. I mean, we're fourth in infant mortality, fourth in child poverty. And we're still worse when it comes down to employment and unemployment. And so we want to introduce a packet of bills that can really get the ball rolling. But more importantly, we want to also have a conversation in the community. And so today we're having a roundtable called Disrupting Disparities from 12 to 2 at UWM's Fireside, located at 2200 East Kenwood Boulevard, to really get the community involved in this discussion. As lawmakers, we know we need to push the policies, but it's also important in making sure that we get community buy-in on whatever policies that we're pushing as well.
And before we move on, when you're talking about fourth in infant mortality for racial disparities in Wisconsin, that's fourth worst in the nation. That's not fourth, fourth from the top. Absolutely. It's fourth worst.
Correct.
I mean, all of this data shows that it's near the bottom for success. One of the bills you're introducing requires the Department of Justice to award up to $5 million in grants to counties or towns where minority groups make up at least 10% of the population. What are these grants intended to do?
Well, what we want to do is actually, you know, we have to invest in really building the relationship between our community and our police department. And so right now, when you think about there are many people in our communities that don't trust the police department, and there are people who are on the police force that don't trust our communities. Many of them may not live in the district anymore, in the city, with everything that has happened with living within the communities that you actually are patrolling. And so we need to bridge this gap of trust. But more importantly, we need to make sure that people understand that we are going to be making incredible investments in this. And we've seen the reports across this country between the community and people of color, and whether you're talking about shootings or depending on the types of arrests that people are having, we need to do everything that we can in making sure that we are pushing the needle forward. We need to move towards 21st century policing, and that's going to take the community and the police coming together, talking about some of the hard truths that we need to tell one another, but more importantly, strategizing together about how we work together.
So Dane County implemented a pilot program a few years ago, putting youth who, you know, committed minor infractions into a restorative court program. Would grants be available for restorative justice strategies then?
I would say yes. I mean, when you think about restorative justice, that is violence prevention. We also want to put dollars towards violence prevention as well. I mean, here in the city of Milwaukee, we have an Office of Violence Prevention that has been going into the communities and making sure that we can prevent crime. And so we can't just look at how we just funded the police department. We have to employ community strategies as well in reducing violence. And this is one of the ways in doing that. And so I would say that restorative justice would be a piece of that. Because we have to look at this holistically. It's not just the police department. It's about what we can do as a community in healing ourselves.
State Representative David Crowley is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 17th Assembly District. That includes Milwaukee. And there's room for you in this discussion about using legislative bills to try to minimize disparities in Wisconsin, especially when it comes to race. Where are the gaps between Wisconsin's white and other and minorities the starkest that you see? Are schools or workplaces? Maybe you work in the criminal justice system. Do you see people of color overrepresented, even in solitary confinement? What do you think we can do about that? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email your thoughts to ideas@WPR.org. Representative, what about youth offenders, people who commit crimes under the age of 18? You want to prohibit courts from sentencing those offenders to life without the possibility of parole. Why is that important in this legislation?
Well, I have to really commend my colleagues, Representative Bowen and Senator Taylor, for really getting us all on board with that. I mean, at the end of the day, when we think about our youth offenders, their brains haven't developed quite fully. And so when we're telling them, at the time that they've committed or you know, basically made a bad decision, that they're going to be locked up without parole for life, we have to take a hard look at ourselves. Again, these young people's brains have not been developed for. So for us to be making these types of decisions, we're really traumatizing them. And so what we really need to be focusing on is how do we really work with these individuals and making sure that they don't come back into the system, if they don't need to come back system. I mean, some of these are egregious crimes, and this is a very small number of individuals who have been sentenced with life without parole. We have to take a hard look at how we're treating our young people and really pipelining them into the criminal justice system. And this is one bill that would actually do that.
I think that is a concern, though, for some people, that if you have people who are minors, and that would, you know, certainly include 13-year-olds, but also 17-year-olds who commit a really horrible, terrifying crime, that that you wouldn't have the kind of penalties available that maybe some people fit the crime. You know, how do you respond to that sort of concern when it comes to the life without parole conversation?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to take this as a case-by-case basis. I mean, if you're talking about a 17-year-old, I don't think we passed the bill yet where they're all going to be considered juveniles yet. But that person can still be waived into adult court depending on the type of case. But again, we're talking, you hit it on the head. When you talk about 13-year-olds, you know, when I was growing up here in the city of Milwaukee, I had a young man who was involved in a crime, and he was about 10 years old. He was one of those individuals that they thought about actually locking up without parole. Now, they took a step back, and I'm glad that they did in making sure that they get him through the system and give him rehabilitation, making sure that he doesn't come back into the system. But we have to take this as a case-by-case basis. You know, we could be talking about some of the most egregious cases, but if we're going to do everything that we can in making sure that our young people aren't pipelined into the prison system, and we're not spending incredible amounts of dollars in the rehabilitation or just keeping people locked up, we know that we need to be spending money on the front end. And so this is one of the ways that we can do this. We just need to take a hard look and really refocus how we look at our criminal justice system.
Let's bring in Jackie from Milwaukee now. Jackie, what do you see?
Oh, hi. I was just saying that, like how he just spoke on the prison to, you know, the prison pipeline. One of the big things I noted was the education. I lived in the suburbs and then recently moved back to Milwaukee. So my kids had to go to school in Milwaukee. And it's a stark difference. Like, they are not set up to learn in middle school. There's 40 students in the classroom. And, you know, if you have somebody who's causing a lot of trouble, they're going to disrupt the class. Other people can't learn. And then it's like, who, you can't blame just one person. It's definitely a system. It's like these kids aren't given a chance. So I'm looking for, like, closing the gaps in not just, you know, the crime. But I think it's multifactorial. If we don't educate and equip our students and our kids, they don't have anything to look forward to.
Jackie, thank you so much for your perspective from Milwaukee. Representative, what do you hear there when she's concerned about all of these different other elements in addition to crime when it comes to racial disparities here?
Absolutely. I mean, whether we talk about education, incarceration, I mean, we unemployment, we have a huge issue, and this is why we are talking about disrupting disparities. We have to have community buy-in. We have to have a shared vision of how we actually move forward together when we're talking about disrupting disparities. As elected officials, we can continue to push different policies, but it's also extremely important that those that are in positions and carrying out these policies can actually do so. And so whether we're talking about education, whether we're talking about the police force, or whatever we're talking about, it's extremely important that our community believes in the vision and disrupting these disparities and get on board. And that's why we're having this event tonight. And so this afternoon. So if folks are available, come down to UWM today from 12 to 2 to have a discussion with us.
Yeah, I mean, we just have a few moments left, but do you think that people are on board right now?
I think there are a lot of people on board. This is not a partisan issue, even though some may try to make it a partisan issue. But at the end of the day, when we all do better, we all do better. And so if we really want to push Wisconsin forward and make sure that this is the best place for you to grow up, go to school, raise your children, be a family, no matter your zip code, we need to start having these conversations. We have to push this community forward. We definitely need to do everything that we can to lift all the boats up when the tide rises.
State Representative David Crowley stays with us talking about legislation some plan to introduce in Wisconsin to ease the disparities, especially between Black and white people living here. The State Capitol Report continues here on The Morning Show. Your ideas are welcome at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Ideas Network. Lawmakers are announcing a package of bills today they say will help narrow the gap between Wisconsin's Black and white residents. One piece of it requires a report considering how changes to crime laws affect racial groups, economic classes, and people of different genders. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and there's room for you in this State Capitol Report. Your questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. The package of bills we're talking about really focuses on reforms to criminal justice, and we've got State Representative David Crowley here with us. He's a Democrat from the district, including Milwaukee, and a member of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus. Representative, a couple of pieces of this legislation do require lawmakers to take a look at how their moves might impact different minority groups economically. Why is this one of the targets for you?
Well, we've seen this bill actually play out in Iowa. Iowa is one of the very first states to have something like this, which is basically a racial impact statement. So any bill that directly affected the criminal justice system or the procurement process had to have some eyes take a look at it and say, you know, how is this going to affect different communities, whether it's racial communities, whether it's going to affect women in particularly, LGBT communities, so on and so forth. And so we see that here in Wisconsin, we have actually pushed many different policies that have been a detriment to many different subgroups, whether you are African-American, Asian, Native American, or woman. And so we believe that anytime that we put a bill through, we need to make sure that this does not have a disparate impact on different types of communities. And so if we want to tackle many of these communities and disrupt the disparities, this is a move in the right direction. And we believe it's common sense.
Let's bring Saeed from Green Bay into the conversation now. Saeed, welcome to the morning show.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Disparities are speak of a great social ill that is in our collective interest to solve. But I think the approach of going to the point of when a crime is committed and looking at how we adjudicate that differently misses the point. There are root causes of these social ills we're trying to address that are much more important. So, for example, our failing schools, the failure factories that are that some of our schools represent is a root cause. And when we talk about these disparities, it's also important to control the effects of poverty. So the same issues affect poor people regardless of their race. And so it is you lose a lot of support when you talk about 16, 17, 18-year-old kids committing capital murder and not facing consequences.
All right, Saeed, thank you for that. And I haven't heard the representative say they wouldn't face consequences, but that it would be on a case-by-case basis. I do wonder, though, Representative, what you say when Saeed is concerned that you're approaching the problems from the wrong end. Is there a right or wrong place to start with all of this?
Yeah, I don't think that there's we need to be tackling all these issues at the exact same time. This is only a start. We're only focusing on the criminal justice system because we know that Republicans and Democrats across this country has been able to come together to look at criminal justice reform. We're not looking to really pat anybody's hand if they're committing egregious crimes. We're looking at how we are creating a pipeline, and particularly for Black men here in Wisconsin, to go to the prison industrial complex. I think that what he's really speaking to is that, you know, we're not just focusing on criminal justice. Absolutely not. We need to be focusing on education. We need to be focusing on the family structure. We need to be focusing on child care. There's so many different things that we can be looking at, and we have to tackle them all head on. As elected officials, we know that we need to work on these all at the same time, but we're bringing these particular bills to the forefront, again, because we know that these are nonpartisan issues.
One of the issues you do hope to tackle is to limit how often people under the age of 18 are restrained when they're brought to court. In what situations do you see that? Why do you want it changed?
Well, at the end of the day, again, I think less than 10% of our young people who are going to court are going in there for some type of violent crime. So many of these young people that are going into there, you know, don't need to be restrained. If there are issues, if there are behavior issues, there may be a mental wellness issue where we may need to restrain that young person. We will do that when need be. But we don't need to be doing this to every child that is walking into the courtroom, because what we're doing is we're setting them up for failure by traumatizing them in that capacity. And so we just want to level the playing field, and this is regardless of race. We just want to level the playing field for any young person that is introduced into the prison industrial complex, that they don't get traumatized and they don't become they don't recidivate, basically come back to the system by recidivism.
State Representative David Crowley joins us here on The Morning Show talking about a package of legislation aimed at narrowing the disparities among the different races who live here in Wisconsin. And, Representative, another part of that proposal stops prisons from putting inmates with serious mental illnesses in solitary confinement. What qualifies as a serious mental illness here?
Well, folks who have pretty much been diagnosed with at least a mental illness, we know there are a lot of folks who are currently serving time right now that are undiagnosed. But you have individuals who we know has a known mental illness. And in order to, in some cases, they would say safety, that they need to put a person in solitary confinement. But what happens is that you start to exacerbate the mental illness at the exact same time. And so if we want to heal these individuals and really rehabilitate these folks, we know that we need to do away with solitary confinement. It has been happening across this world where solitary confinement really is a huge issue and a detriment to many of the things that are in there. And so if we want to, again, heal these individuals and really focus on integrating them back into society, this is something that we need to do. This is not doing any good in the prison system, and I think it's causing many issues with many of our inmates as well.
And you're talking more broadly. Also, Judith Resnick, who's a professor at Yale Law School, says that people of color are overrepresented in solitary confinement compared to the general prison population. So there is the issue of mental illness. There's also the issue of race here again.
There is an issue of race. You see more African Americans locked up more than anybody across this country. I grew up in the 53206 zip code, which is the most incarcerated zip code in the country, possibly the world, since we're the only ones that use zip codes. But when you think about those who are also the correctional officers, many of those correctional officers may not know how to deal with many of those inmates who may just look different than them. And so it's extremely important that we give our correctional officers the training that they need in order to really provide a level of service for many of these inmates. And so it's extremely important that when we tackle these issues, mental health doesn't just affect African Americans, but what we do know is that there are more African Americans that are subject to this.
These bills are being introduced by the Legislative Black Caucus today. How do you intend to get bipartisan support?
Well, we're going to continue to work with our colleagues. It's really about having a conversation. Many of the bills, they may directly affect African Americans disproportionately, but they affect all communities that are currently incarcerated. And so it's really about having that conversation about doing the right thing. Many of my colleagues understand that we really, truly need criminal justice reform, and this is a step in the right direction. So I'm excited to have these conversations. And those listening, make sure you reach out to your representatives and let them know how you feel about it.
And lawmakers have to be optimistic about the plans that they have. They certainly want to get other people on board. What happens if these bills don't attract the kind of support you need to gain traction in the state legislature? What happens then?
Well, we continue to talk about these issues. Just because we don't get bills passed doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue to work on them. We see, across the board where there are issues that the public wants to pass, but we as lawmakers don't pass them. So it's really about going out to our communities, organizing, letting folks know what we need to do in order to move Wisconsin forward, and working with our legislators. And if we can't get those legislators on board and that community is on board, then I think it's time to change the face of those legislators. We need to really move this community in a better direction. And the only way to do that is for us to come together. And it's going to take some compromise. Whether you agree with many of these issues or not, some of these proposals are some of the best ways in really disrupting the disparities that we see here in the state of Wisconsin.
Representative, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
State Representative David Crowley is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 17th Assembly District, which includes Milwaukee. He and other members of the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus are releasing a package of bills to the public. That's happening this morning at 11 o'clock. We'll post a link to the draft legislation on our website once it's available. Find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.